From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM, and tonight, Ghost to Ghost. Oh, boy, this is what you have to look forward to tonight. Hey, by the way, get up to the coasttocoastam.com website. Take a look at parts 1 and 2 of the Halloween gallery in the highlights reel. Some incredible graphics submitted by Coast to Coast listeners. Unbelievable stuff. Let's get some of the news out of the way. Here's what's happening. If you fly a lot like I do, well, listen to this one. Airline passengers will soon be allowed to use a range of mobile electronic devices in flight with very few restrictions now. The new, more relaxed rules issued by the Federal Aviation Administration will take effect on most airlines by the end of the year. However, mobile phones still cannot be used for voice communications while in flight due to regulations by another federal agency. And, of course, that is the Federal Communications Commission that prohibits airborne cell phone calls. So on probably all airlines, by the end of the year, you'll be allowed to use your tablets and electronics like that. Syria's declared equipment for producing, mixing, and filling chemical weapons has now been destroyed, according to the International Watchdog Group, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. The weapons have been placed under seal. And Israeli warplanes, however, apparently struck a military base near the Syrian port city of Latakia this week. An explosion at a missile storage site in the area was reported, the attack not confirmed by the Israeli government. Let's check in with Jerome Corsi, who writes for WND and also an accomplished author. Jerry, what's your take on all of this?
George, I think the violence in the Middle East is again escalating. The danger right now is that Iran looks almost certain to develop nuclear capabilities. I think they'll have nuclear weapons within a very short period of time. All the anticipations are that Iran is enriching weapons-grade uranium, or will be doing it shortly. And the likelihood is that Israel is increasingly thinking of a first strike to stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. And if that occurs, we've got a very dangerous situation in the Middle East of an expanded war.
We sure do, Jerry. And even though I think things seem calm, I think like you do, at any point it could erupt.
I do too, George. I think you could wake up, we could all wake up any day and find that Israel has struck Iran, the nuclear facilities. And when that happens, the escalation is going to be unpredictable. It's very possible we could have a nuclear exchange in the Middle East.
Oh, boy, that's all we need. Jerry, thank you. You stay in touch with us. Closing live poultry markets in China dramatically curtailed the spread of a strain of bird flu this year. The report showed that shutting the markets cut the number of new cases of H7N9 bird flu by 97%. A new Food and Drug Administration report called Pathogens and Filth in Spices says that 12% of the U.S. spice imports are contaminated with, I hate to say this, bug parts, rodent hairs, and other ingredients more appropriate to a witch's brew than your mother's favorite recipe. The FDA study also found that 7% of spice imports the inspectors examined were contaminated with salmonella. Let's check in with our food safety coach, Jeff Nelgan. Jeff, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a lot of research that they put together, and they came up with results that they were quite surprised with. And as you mentioned, you know, not only, you know, the insect parts and the hair, feathers and twigs and staples and synthetic fibers and rubber bands, there's just a whole lot going on from the spices that start out somewhere in the world, get shipped, you know, over to the United States, and then are in warehouses, and then they're going to be processed again. So there's a lot going on that the FDA is going to have to try to get their arms around.
Now, Jeff, unlike foods where you told us, folks, you got to cook it or you got to wash it, what can we do if you get a bad spice?
Well, you know, it comes down to cooking style. And, you know, a lot of folks are used to, you know, cooking spices, in their dishes. The problem that I have is when people start sprinkling the spices after the food has been cooked.
Ah, good point.
Is an issue that I think we need to be a little bit more sensitive to. And my personal experience about 15 years ago, I was using spices in freshly made salads and found that the salads were spoiling within 3 to 4 days. And then I myself learned that many of the spices that were being purchased had bacterial counts that caused, the spoilage to start to speed up.
Jeff, in my earlier days, I'd moved around so much, I brought everything with me and kept it in storage and then brought it out and kept it in storage. So I had a number of spices that must have been 15 years old. I used some of those. Not very smart, was it?
Well, I would say that, most spices that we have on our shelves today in the supermarkets are at least 1 to 2 years old. I mean, we're not talking fresh product
right. That
just came in and, you grind it up scenario. And, one of the things they found out with the salmonella and black pepper is that once there's just a little bit of moisture getting into black pepper, then the salmonella can live there for like 8 months.
Jeez. All right. Jeff's website, foodsafetycoach.com. Well, now here's a story on fracking that says that there's a low health risk from fracking. This, according to a United Kingdom agency, they simply say the risks to public health from fracking for shale gas are low, according to this report. Any problems publicized so far, such as in the U.S., they say, are the result of operational failure or poor regulation. You say that to folks who live near these areas that have been fracked. They've had all kinds of problems here, especially in the water that way. Police in Pennsylvania seizing 40 pounds of drug-laced candy from a college campus. According to prosecutors, the Halloween candy laced with THC, the active ingredient in marijuana. But there are far worse things that are found in candy. As a matter of fact, in my early days, Mom used to take the whole candy, dump it out, and look for anything that might have looked like the wrappers had been moved or changed or something. She was looking for glass, needles, chips of razor blades. Let's check in with Peter Bregan, the psychiatrist, because these things still happen. Peter, why are people so sick to do this?
Well, I think this is an overreaction. The marijuana-laced candies were actually not intended for children. They were college students who now face felony charges for hiding candy, hiding marijuana in candy. There's another group that was sort of manufacturing and distributing for adults, again, using the candy to disguise. My looking it over, George, is that this is just one more thing where we're scaring our kids and wanting to keep our kids close to us and parents being afraid, kind of like the kidnapping of small children issue.
Sure. But isn't it better to, err on the side of caution? I mean, because, Peter, truly, in my days in Dearborn Heights in Michigan near Detroit, there were people who would lace candy. I mean, they would stick little needles in candy and stuff. I mean, really sick stuff. I don't hear a lot of it today, but I bet it's out there.
Well, I'm sure it's out there. But I'm really, as I look this over, I got the same lesson I've gotten from a lot of other fear stories about kids getting hurt. And that is, they mostly get hurt by their own families. The only death I could find from laced candy at Halloween was administered by a father who wanted to kill his kid to get insurance money, and this man was eventually executed. So I'd come back to saying the biggest fears that children generally are going to be, the real sickos, as you put it, are going to be their own family members who are betraying a sacred trust and not really taking care of their kids. I don't want to see kids in America getting more and more scared about doing anything.
No, I just want people to be cautious, though. So happy Halloween to everybody, right, Peter? Peter Bregan, his website, of course, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Story in the news at coasttocoastam.com. A ghostly image of former Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez has appeared to workers digging out a new subway tunnel in Caracas. The South American strongman's successor, Nicolas Maduro, claims a portrait of the 58-year-old who died from cancer in March. A workman managed to take a photograph of the apparition on his cell phone, and we've got it for you at coasttocoastam.com. Hey, this email in from a family simply saying, Happy Halloween, George. When my daughter Lily was 11, she called into the show, spoke to you and Joshua Warren when you were talking about Robert the Haunted Doll. She will tell you it was one of the highlights of her life. That night, my husband and I were up after the show, and while it was very quiet in the house, we heard small feet running loudly across the living room floor. I went to check it out. The house was dark. My girls were asleep. The next day, my husband took his boat out in the ocean. Guess what? The motor broke. He had to be towed back to town by the Coast Guard. That following week, many other bad things kept happening. Too many to list. Luckily, not too bad. Anyway, happy Halloween to yours. Thanks. I'm glad you're okay. In a moment, we will begin Ghost to Ghost. I'm going to give you the phone numbers here in a second. But if you're home, shut off the lights, pull up the covers, and get ready for that. If you're driving, well, I'm not going to tell you to shut off the lights. You just be very careful out there. And if you're at work, like so many people are, kind of dim the lights a little bit, because you're going to love tonight's program. So here are the phone numbers for you. Ghost to Ghost begins soon. Some of you have emailed us your ghost stories. Tom will call you and get you on the line. Others will have the lines open for you throughout the night. Next hour and the remaining couple hours after that, I'll also open up a special ghostly haunted phone line for you. So those of you can try calling that too, and we'll start that next hour. But Ghost to Ghost begins in a second. Here are the numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller, 818-501-4721. The wild card line is 818-501-4109. And our Skype line is up at George97313. Here's one thing on the Skype line for you, because this is a connection between you and Tom. You have to wear a costume when you call into Tom on the Skype line at George97313. Simple as that. We'll be back in a moment with Ghost to Ghost right here on Coast to Coast AM.
Lock your windows, bolt your doors tight.
For evil comes forth this Halloween night.
Who was that? Guess who that might have been. Anyways, Ghost to Ghost for you here on Coast to Coast. It's our annual tradition, of course, started a long time ago by Art Bell and then carried on by those who are here before me and now me. I've been lucky enough to do it most of the years that I've been here, which is now going on 11 years. Can you believe that? Anyway, let's go to the phones. Let's pick it up by going to Nathan in Mineral Springs, Illinois, with his story. Hey, Nathan, welcome to the program. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. So what do you have for us?
Well, first off, I think it's good to say my very first time coming here. I was having a really hard time in my life because I actually live in a haunted house.
Oh, boy.
And I was having so many things happen to me that I actually thought that I was becoming a schizophrenic. And so my mom decided enough is enough, and she took me to Mineral Springs. And so the first time we got here, I was told nothing about this place prior to coming. I was just told that stuff happens here. And she told me to walk around the place, you know, get my bearings. And so I walk into the ballroom, and on the next to the ballroom is this little area with a fountain. And I walk in there. I'm not even in the building for 5 minutes.
You could feel things, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah, and it's something didn't feel right, and as soon as I walk in that room, I'm just looking around, and behind me, I hear someone say, can you play with me? And I turn around, I'm pretty scared, and there's no one behind me, so I run up, tell my mom what happened, and Janet confirms that, yeah, and the little girl actually died here in the men's pool.
And she hangs around, she wants people to play with. Yeah. That's kind of sad, though, too, Nathan, isn't it? As scary as it is, it's sad.
It really is.
Any more episodes with her?
Oh, yeah, there are plenty. Actually, she died in the gentleman's pool, and her name is Cassandra. The story behind her is she got the gentleman's pool rented out for her birthday, and she slipped, hit her head, and drowned in the pool.
My gosh.
And one of the more popular things to do here is if you bring, like, say, marbles or bouncy balls, you can roll them up the gentleman's pool, and they will just stop, abruptly stop. And if you ask for them, they will just slowly start coming down.
It's like she stops them, and she's the one who rolls them back to you.
Exactly right. And there was another time where we were just kind of bored, and we bought an entire bag of just bouncy balls. And me and probably about four of the people were just sitting here bouncing bouncy balls around. And finally, we were just bouncing them around the gentleman's pool. And one of us threw one against the wall. We heard it hit the wall, but then nothing.
Did the feeling, though, of being scared go away?
Yeah, actually, because now that I've been here for so many years, it just paranormal stuff does not scare me anymore.
But do you look forward to going back there?
Oh, yeah. Like, I love this place. I have no problems ever coming here.
Well, what happens, though, Nathan, if you ever encounter one of those kind of spirits that aren't as friendly?
I'm sorry, what? You broke up.
What if you ever fall into a spirit who's not friendly?
I've actually had that a couple times here. It's not that bad, but it generally yields some very interesting results. We actually just earlier this year, might have been like January, me and five other people went into the ladies' pool, and as soon as we walked in there, we had a ghost box on with us. As soon as we walk in there, we hear, "Get out."
Oh, my God. Now, who the heck died there?
We actually don't know who died, if anyone died in the ladies' pool. But, so, yeah, we go in there. We get told to get out, but we just don't really care. And it was me and four or five others. Wow. Three of them leave the room to go to the bathroom, and it's me and another investigator. And we're just provoking, you know, we're just trying to get rocks thrown at us, because when we first walked in there, one of us actually had a rock thrown at us. And so we were just trying to get it to happen again. So three of them leave the room, and me and another investigator are down there. So we're asking them to throw a rock at us. And another one of the investigators says, "Hey, Nathan, you should go back in the back part of the pool to see if someone will throw a rock at you." Because there were just all sorts of walls and boards ripped down. And I wouldn't go back in there because there's all sorts of spiders. And I'm not scared of ghosts.
I hate spiders. I bet you do, too.
I hate spiders. And I was like, I'm not going back in there. I'm a wuss when it comes to spiders. The ghost box actually laughs and starts calling me all sorts of names, like wuss, just stuff like that. And eventually, I do actually get a rock thrown at me. And it was actually in the part of the room that I would not go into.
Well, let me tell you, Nathan, I'm glad you finally got out, and good luck at Mineral Springs. That's a haunted area in Illinois. He's spending his Halloween there. And so many people around the country are doing all these spooky things on Halloween. Haunted houses all over the place in major cities. Some people have set these things up as businesses. There are some companies that will literally go to this house that somebody has purchased, and for a fee, and it could be costly, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, maybe even more, they will design a haunted house for you. And then you just staff it, go get your license from whatever jurisdiction you live in, and then off you go. So you're part of that. But we've got 3.5 more hours to go of Ghost to Ghost for you right here on Coast to Coast. And we'll give you the numbers in just a second. Those of you who want to participate in the program tonight, those of you who sent us emails, just be patient. We very well may give you a call. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be right back on Ghost to Ghost.
happy haunting.
Gosh, I remember when I was a kid, a couple people, of course, you all know Morgus, right? He was one of my favorites, always dressed up like the zany professor and scientist. And then there was one called Sir Graves Gastly in Detroit. And I think Sir Graves also went to Toledo and went to Cleveland. But he played the part of a vampire, and he was always, you know, introducing movies and things like that. And he lived in a casket. So, you know, the show would start, the casket would open up, and Sir Graves would pop up. And there he'd be to do his thing. Anyways, those of you who are calling us on Skype, put a costume on. George 97313. Because if you got your camera on, we can see you. Let's go now. Let's go to Cincinnati, Ohio. Ed is with us. Ed, welcome to the program. How are you?
Good, George. How are you?
Good. You ready to scare us?
I tell you what, George, I've got a pretty good story for you.
Okay.
I recently retired after a wonderful 25-year career in law enforcement. And I had a very strange experience involving a coworker many years ago I thought you'd like to know about.
Okay. Love to.
I was acting shift supervisor at the time, and one of the subordinates on my crew, who was a rookie at the time, was continually failing to close the cemetery gates in his district. Now, one of the nightly duties for the officers in each district was to close the cemetery gates within their assigned area, and this could only be done, you know, after dark, given the fact that the cemetery was open until dark. So you would actually have to patrol the inside of the cemetery and make sure no one was still visiting inside prior to closing the gates. So there was a bit more to it than just locking the gates.
I'd hate to get locked into a cemetery. Oh, my God.
I would, too. I would, too, George. The first few times I found the gates open, I went ahead and closed them, you know, for the officer, but I finally had to discuss it with him. And you know, why he wasn't closing the gates. So after we talked about the matter a few times, I got the feeling there was more to it than just forgetfulness, nor did I believe that it was any type of insubordination. The guy was very conscientious about his job. He was well-educated and had majored in criminal justice and just didn't fit everything else in his job performance. It was just, you know, so much different as his performance was spot on.
Mm-hmm.
So the last time we discussed the matter, he finally broke down and told me probably one of the most frightening stories that I've ever heard outside of a theater or a television broadcast.
Jeez, what did he say?
He said, yeah, at the time we had the conversation, he was probably about 23 or 24 years old when we had this talk. And he said that when he was 17 or 18, he volunteered as a camp counselor at a youth camp in a remote part of southern Ohio. There were two counselors to a cottage which housed the younger children that were attending the camp. And the children ranged in age between 10 and 13. So late one night, one of the children in his cottage became extremely ill. And my friend recognized that this child needed to go home immediately.
Oh, sure.
You know, they couldn't wait until morning. So to adhere with policy of the camp, my friend summoned another counselor from a neighboring cottage to escort the child to the main camp office that was some distance from the cottages. Since there were two counselors to a cottage, one had to stay with the remaining children while my friend escorted the child with another counselor from the neighboring cottage. So my friend and the counselor began escorting this child to the main camp office on a trail that was flanked to the left by a tree line and to the right by a hayfield. Now, once again, it's pitch black. This is probably around 3 o'clock in the morning.
And I'm trying to picture this. Trees on the left, hayfield to the right, pretty narrow, I guess, right?
Okay. Yes, right, and dark. I don't know if they had a flashlight. I would assume they had maybe a small flashlight or something, but about halfway through the walk to the camp office, my friend said that he noticed an elderly female that was dressed in period clothing that was approaching them from the hayfield.
I already don't like this story.
Well, that's good, George.
That is good.
But he noticed right away that the woman was unusual. You know, not only because of her clothing, but because she seemed to be lit up, not brightly lit, but enough to discern her shape from the darkness. So as the woman approached, my friend began to notice that she was translucent. All three people, the two camp counselors and the child just froze in the trail and was just watching this unfold. And this whole woman, as she approached them, she crossed in front of their path.
Floated, probably, right?
Floating.
Yeah.
That she wasn't actually walking, she was floating. And at that point, and what's odd about it is the lights just went off at my house. So that's kind of strange.
She's flickering the lights on you.
Yeah, we actually have some really bad storms, so it's fitting for Halloween here. But this, you know, this lady passed directly in front of them on this trail and just sort of dissipated into the tree line. Now, of course, they were, you know, they were all shook up and ran back to the camp office.
That sounded like a good plan.
He actually picked this child up and ran with the child in his arms to complete, you know, the journey back to this office. After they got back, and I guess the next day or a few days later, he did some research and found out that this particular camp was originally an old farm back in the 1800s, and the farm was owned by an elderly man and an elderly woman, the man of which was said to have an affair with the housekeeper. And at the height of the affair, the old man reportedly murdered his wife while she sat on the porch by moving a slate shingle aside and causing it to fall on her head. The woman, the old woman, was said to have initially survived the trauma but died sometime later. And now, here's the thing, George. Why this was, obviously it's a frightening story, but what was most frightening is this guy's credibility. Now, my friend is no one you would think to be afraid. He was about 6'7". He weighed 250 pounds, played college ball. And, you know, still to this day is a man of men.
This children, so, didn't it?
So what I can say is I've never personally witnessed anything remotely paranormal by way of ghosts. And in fact, I'm very much a skeptic. But I believe my friend, and whether that legend he later learned was true or not, I know he saw exactly what he said that he saw on that particular night.
That's a chilling story, Ed.
It is.
All right. Thanks for sharing that for us. Geez, already right out of the box, a couple incredible ghost stories. Share yours with us. Let's go to Dan in Montreal on the international line. Hey, Dan, thanks for calling.
I apologize for having to be on the speakerphone, George, but a speech, a hearing impairment necessitates.
In that case, we will accommodate you, Dan.
Thank you very much. I hope the story is worthwhile.
Okay.
It is to do with my mother's passing. She was hospitalized after a long illness and only given a few hours to live upon her hospitalization. However, the doctors and the attending staff called her the miracle lady because she hung on for over 24 hours, long enough for my brother to travel a long distance to meet with us. And while she was in the hospital, him and myself took shifts overseeing her and waiting for her passing. While he was there, he noticed that she would regain consciousness and actually fight to stay alive, the same thing that when I took over a shift on her final night, I noticed. She would regain consciousness, almost become lucid, and you could see the pain and the fight in her eyes.
Oh. She did not want to give up, did she?
Of my shift with her, I was almost inspired at one point when she regained consciousness and looked at me to tell her simply Mom, I said, think of all the people you're going to meet. You're going to meet my dad, Ted Wilcox. You're going to meet Uncle so-and-so, Aunt so-and-so, cousin this one. And I went on to a litany of past relatives and tried to encourage her to her belief in the afterlife and explained to her all the people that were waiting to greet her. And with my list of people, almost a peacefulness came to her face. The wrinkles almost disappeared, and she almost had a pleasant look on her face, and her blue eyes stared up for me, at me. And in that relaxing moment, she had been in a large room, usually used for a ward, and the bed was pushed towards the window. At that moment, the air in the room became chilled. The hair on the back of my neck stood up, and I turned and looked over my shoulder, and the room, George, was filled with people, completely filled.
You made her trip, Dan. You made her trip so peaceful.
And that's the story. And again, I apologize for the speaker.
No, don't worry about that.
The input of the story will give people a lot of comfort.
All right. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate that. And by the way, any of you who, this is not the kind of program where you should be embarrassed to call the show. You know, there are some shows that if you have a stutter, they're going to hang up on you. Or in Dan's case, he's got a hearing problem. If you need that speakerphone, go for it. You don't have to worry about that here. You know, you'll get through. Tom will get you on, and we'll take care of you. What a story, huh? Ghost to ghost. We're going to do this all night long, practically all night long. Let's go to another caller. We'll go to Robert in Lubbock, Texas, east of the Rockies. Hey, Robert, good morning.
Oh, good morning, George. Happy Halloween, I should say.
You too, and thanks for holding.
Oh, not a problem. What? I have a creeper for you. This one took place in Los Angeles in 1979, and it still haunts me today.
Okay, what happened?
Well, we moved to another house, and when we moved there, we had fun running around looking at all the rooms, and the two back bedrooms and the bathroom in the back were added on. And in order to get to them, you had to go outside of the family room door, which let you out onto the patio. And then you would walk toward the backyard, and then you could enter into the bedrooms that way, like army barracks.
Okay.
Okay. So my brother and I took the back bedrooms, and I was very young. He was old enough to drive, and he'd be out at night. And one night he came in about 11:30 midnight, and he was petrified. He said, "There's a guy, a man standing in the backyard, a big guy, white hair, slick back, wearing a bathrobe." He said, "I made all this noise coming toward him, and he's just standing there, and he's looking at the drain pipe, and he's looking at the roof, and he just walked away."
Oh, man.
And I'm not afraid at all.
Creepy.
We just moved in last week. I said, "It's a neighbor. He's looking for a pet. He's stealing lemons off the tree."
Yeah.
"That's all." He said, "No."
He's in his slippers, his robe, wandering around.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's a neighbor. Okay. My aunt and her daughter, my cousin, had the front bedroom. And she said, "You know, I've been hearing walking outside my window. And when I look out, there's nothing there." And my brother said, "Walking, like towards the backyard?" She said, "Yes." She said, "But I can hear shuffling, heavy feet, like in slippers." And I'm like, "You guys are crazy." So my grandmother had a suspicion, and she didn't really want to bring it up because she didn't want to scare us. So she went next door, and she said, "Hey, I'm your neighbor. I haven't had a chance to introduce myself yet, and, you know, here we are." And she said, "By the way, there's a gentleman that's been in our yard, and I was wondering if you would happen to know anything about him. Could you let me know?" And the story my grandmother always told me was she went next door because she thought she had done business with him. She said she was going to say that to the neighbor.
Yeah.
And the neighbors thought, because she didn't want to scare the, you know what, out of me. And the neighbor explained to her. He said, "There's only one way to say this, lady. Relax. That is Clark.
We've seen him too. He used to have insomnia at night, and he would walk around the house and walk around the yard, and he died when that house was still under construction.
Oh.
That's why your drain pipe is up against the house. That's why the shed wasn't finished. He said, we've seen him too.
That's a great story.
Came back, and I overheard this, and I'm thinking, oh, my God. And it was a long, long, long time before I could walk out to that back bedroom through that yard by myself. I couldn't even begin to tell you the fear. I mean, I was young. I was petrified. He was standing outside my bedroom window looking at the drain.
You know, once you know about good old Clark, he doesn't seem scary, does he?
Maybe to
a little boy, but.
A little boy, I was petrified. But once you know that it was, and you know, a strange thing happened. His granddaughter, we had lived there for 3 years, and his granddaughter had come to the house, and she was very sweet, and she said, hi, you'll forgive me. I used to live here. My grandfather, Clark, built this house. And she said, I had that back bedroom. And I said, yes, I have that one now. She said, could I just take pictures of the house? I said, of course. And I thought, I'm not going to tell her. But no, as I look back now, he built the house for his family, and then boom, he passed away suddenly from a heart attack, and he had unfinished business. And you're right, it is not scary. It was a little chilling, but it still bothers me.
But it's a great story. I mean, it's a great story at how Eddie, a entity, will just stick around and not leave. Even if he's in his robe and his slippers, and he simply just hangs around. I love that story. I really do. By the way, if you need to email me on show-related matters or some topics and story ideas that you want me to pass on to Lisa and Tom, just simply send me an email at george@coasttocoastam.com, george@coasttocoastam.com. On our Friday program, we are going to have open lines, plus we're going to talk a little bit about the devil. And when I come back right after the top of the hour, we will continue with 3 more hours to go of Ghost to Ghost. Those of you on hold, don't leave. You'll lose your place in line. Some of you have been on since the beginning of the hour, so don't go anywhere. I'll be back in a moment with more of your ghost stories and more of your spooky stories. Plus, we're going to open up a special hotline for you as well. I'll tell you about that when we come right back.